Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Caught Offside with Andrew Gunling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside from just outside of New York City and from an apartment in Brooklyn, New York. Andrew Gunling and JJ Devaney. What's up, brother?
What is the one fear you have about me regarding this podcast and something that I might do? What would you say that one fear is?
Multiple fears. One is your behavior on social media.
Correct.
Two is smugness run wild in a way that I can no longer bear.
Oh, God.
Three would be...
Oh, he's gone three.
I'm thinking back to past incidents between you and I. VAR dust-ups between us. Mourinho dust-ups between us. You ruining scores for me of games that I told you I was DVRing.
Have I gone too far?
Oh,
well, this is a deep list that I'll have to recount on Friday to my therapist. So I want to keep it shorter than that. Wow. What I was thinking was how I embarrass you in front of people you might respect and that I might contact people that you respect. Like, for example, when I said on the podcast, I was going to call Brian McBride and ask him why he left the U.S. general manager's job.
That's not a fear of mine. That's you embarrassing yourself. I have nothing to do with that.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, today I was out for my lunchtime walk, and I was just brimming with anger over what happened to Evan Ferguson, and I wanted retribution. And so I realized that Howard Webb is the head of the PGMOL, basically the referee's body. And I realized I had his email, or I thought I had his email, from when I spoke with him at the New York Soccer Gala in February of 2020. So I had what I thought was a long chat with Howard. No, both of us had beers. They were honoring Bruce Arena that night. That was the night Bob Lee blanked me. When I told him I worked for ESPN, he was like, shrug of his shoulders. Couldn't have cared less.
Yeah.
That was the night I went up the elevator with both Chris Armas and...
What does any of this have to do with their Howard Webb story? All right, now you're just name-dropping for the sake of it.
Dropping names. But anyways, I was going to email Howard Webb, and I realized I still have his email. But alas, Andrew, it's his email from when he was the PRO general manager here in the US. Great to hear from you and to meet you in person last night at the gala. I enjoyed our brief chat. That's from Howard Webb when I asked him to come on the podcast. And it was just so... I was crestfallen that he called it a brief chat. I have a view that everybody talks to me for a long time and has a great time. But anyway...
It might have been brief for him. You probably did 95% of the talking. His commentary was probably brief, and that's what he remembered about it.
We had a fabulous back and forth. But the point being, I was about to email it, and then I realized, hey, hold your anger there. This email is just going to bounce back and it's meaningless.
So you just wanted to, what, have just like a friendly correspondence?
I wanted to say to him, can you give me the reason? And this was before the ruling flashed up on my phone from ESPN this evening, where the PGMOL said they made an error in not sending Fabinho off. I wanted to ask Howard Webb, in a very 19th century fashion, what is the meaning of this? Like, how was this not adjudicated upon during the game? That was the kind of rage I was in on my supposed to be relaxing walk.
This is odd to me. Like, to be so, I don't know, like, to be so incensed with your own team that it would compel you to email a referee.
It was more like I can accept, you know, like Liverpool losing. I wanted them to win that game, but that whole thing, all my feelings about VAR and the way VAR has just, I felt, being used and misused and in some cases not used at all. And it just all welled up in me. So I wanted an explanation. It wasn't that I wanted Fabinho actually suspended, which he won't be now.
Seems like that is what you're driving towards.
No. I wanted to know why he wasn't red carded there. Like, what is the point?
Because they made a mistake. That's why.
How?
Because it's people.
The world and its mother knew that was a red card.
I agree. I mean, I guess, like, we were going to talk about this later in the podcast, but we've kind of conducted more than half of the conversation. JJ, right now, you're listening to Caught Offside, I should say. JJ is referring to the Liverpool-Brighton match in the FA Cup, which ended 2-1 to Brighton on an extra time or a stoppage time winner, an unbelievable goal for Brighton to go through and upset Liverpool. It set off one of the great... what is somebody from Brighton called? Like, if we're referring to their... What's that?
A seagull.
No, that's not it. Like, when a seagull. No, yeah. not a player on the team. I mean, so if you're someone who lives in Brighton.
A Brightonian.
Okay, Brightonian lungs. It was a great moment of Brightonian lungs when that goal went in. It was almost Scottish, JJ, in its decibels and its bass. I mean, it was an incredible moment for Brighton, a team that's flying in the Premier League, that now gets this moment almost as sort of like a validation of the season they're having, because I don't know that it's going to end in the Champions League, but no matter what, now they can always go back and remember this moment in the FA Cup when they beat Liverpool in the 92nd minute of a game. I mean, it was just an incredible moment for them in a season that has been surreal in several ways. So, I mean, that's the good, but what you're referring to was what, I mean, for anybody watching, looked like a sure thing red card.
And Fabinho thought so too. You could see by his reaction. He was just waiting.
I think that maybe I'm wrong. It can't be all the evidence, but I do believe that a player's instantaneous reaction to a moment like that, a pure, genuine reaction, it has to be taken in as part of the evidence of what occurred. I really think that. Just like raw human reaction to something. His reaction screamed, "Up, oh, I'm out. That's my day. I'm done." 100%.
Yeah.
He thought, but he was sure he was off.
But VAR doesn't have, like, VAR can just say, "You've made a mistake. I think you've missed something there." Doesn't do it. I mean, it's specifically designed for these things.
Well, here's the thing with what I think is happening with VAR.
Implementing it.
Well, from where it began to the moment that we're in now with it, is there's a little bit of inconsistency with how each VAR views their responsibility. And I think certain VARs, if I guess that's what you call them, certain VARs are being overly, I think they're overly correcting. Like, they're being a little too cautious with making sure that they're not over officiating the match, because they saw the way the initial reaction was to the way VAR was being used, that it was being used to re-referee matches. We used to use that term all the time. They're re-refereeing the game through VAR. And so I think you have some certain people who are operating VAR, who are the VAR, who don't want to do that, that they saw the reaction that that's not what the public wants this tool to be used for. So we're not going to do that. And so I think that this was an overcorrection, what happened with this one. They viewed this as subjective. Yeah, it looks like a red to me, but I'm not here to re-officiate. It's a subjective call. That's what they saw on the field. They view it more as a black and white thing. Was he offside or not? Did it touch a hand or not? If there's a potential foul in the box, was it a dive or not? Like, I think there are certain guys who view this as black and white. If it's a subjective decision, we're not getting involved. That's not what we're here for. But the black and white things, we need to make sure that another Henri handball against Ireland, that can never happen again. That's why we're here. We're not here for the subjective stuff. And by the way, if that is in fact how where VAR settles, if we're deciding between the two, over officiating or letting it be like this, I'm okay with this version of it.
But are you okay with, like, I mean, that's a foul. We don't know.
Yeah,
yet.
I think so too. I think so too.
Andrew, it's a foul that he leaves on crutches. Okay, you can't allow the player safety to be compromised for this idea of, and I totally agree with you, and it is a diktat that's come down to basically let the game flow, let things go, bring it back to a faster paced game and allow the tackles that are in the gray area. I don't think he can do it.
I think that this is a little bit of an exception to the rule with what happened here. I think 8 times out of 10, that red card is getting shown after VAR gets a look at it.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know that we can cast aspersions on the whole system because of what happened here in this incident. They got lucky. They got lucky. He got extremely lucky. They didn't. I mean, in the end, it didn't matter. They wound up losing anyway. But
it does matter, though. Like, I mean, this is a player for Brighton who's been brilliant for them, a center forward. He's only 18. Mm-hmm. He's been like the answer to all their prayers. They've been able to sell center forwards and bringing a guy like this from the academy. He was also probably going to start against France at the end of March. February's a short month. You put the games together. He's not going to be there. And you see what he did to Kanate over across two games, the league game and the cup game. And he was just excellent. And now we don't have him for that. Now, nothing changes. Like Fabinho's tackle, giving him a red card is irrelevant. The damage was done, but.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's just, I should really say that I wanted to start the podcast focusing on all the good things, the magic of the cup. But then I kind of got indulged in my own stuff and Howard Webb and walks and emails. So I apologize to everyone. I wanted to say a couple of things before we get into the rest of the podcast, because I've ruined the flow of the whole thing. We have a very much anticipated in the club coming up, Andrew.
Oh,
coming up for the second pod this week. It is going to be great. I'm looking forward to doing it. And it's with a club that's very close to American people's hearts. Mm. And you can, by process of elimination, you can get down to that club because we've already done Everton and we've already done Leeds United. So
that is who, in saying it close to Americans' hearts, I think 90% of our audience would be guessing Leeds right now. But the fact that you've just ruled them out means that the other 10% are probably correct.
We did one on YouTube with Leeds already, so right. it's going to be Fulham. Let's be honest.
Oh well, wow!
I'm really looking forward to that. But more details, when it drops on probably Thursday's podcast, I would imagine.
Okay.
But anyway, back to the weekend's action, Andrew. I apologize. I've stepped all over everything.
Yeah, you really took a hold of the wheel. I thought I was behind it. You opened the door. You kicked me out. I'm flailing right now on the shoulder.
And I've taken off to Vegas in a drug and drink filled boozed obsession in a car.
A binge. But at any rate, I'm now in an Uber and I'm following you and I'm trying to recontrol the vehicle. And so we'll stay with the FA Cup, JJ. We've now done Liverpool and Brighton.
Before we have not. We have to just luxuriate a little bit longer in Matoma's goal.
Okay.
I just want to break it down in terms of first of all, I don't think I've ever seen it before. I've seen fellas fake guys and to shoot and then pull out of it and hit it with their left foot. I've never seen someone flick it over, but make it look so much like they're about to lash the cover off the ball to the point that Kanate turns. Unfortunately, Darwin Nunes is just, he's in some kind of a stupor. He's absolutely pointless having him there. But Matoma goes to leather it and in midair pulls out of it, flicks it up, and then hits it again. Unbelievable. With the same foot. This is a guy who is, I don't know where his career is going. He could blaze out. He could flame out somewhere. I really hope he stays at Brighton. But this is a guy in such good form. He is a reason to watch Brighton. He's so good. He's so quick. He's fast. His ability to dribble. And then he does something like that to win the game. Oh.
you start to look at Brighton a little bit almost as the way we were looking at Southampton
better.
10 to 15 years ago. I just mean in their ability,
yeah, right.
In their ability to start just producing talent at an absurd rate. And I mean, Southampton were rated for that talent repeatedly. Liverpool, yeah, oftentimes the beneficiary of a lot of it, I felt like. But I feel like Brighton are now generating talent at an extraordinary rate. I don't know if that's down to, I guess their scouting has been sensational. And it makes sense. It's translated. Look where they're at in the table. Look what they just did in the FA Cup. Yeah, and this is, you know, they lost Cucurella in the last window over the last summer. And I'm sure there's more to come. But it's really amazing what they're doing.
Yeah. And I just think it's a grim conversation, but it's an inevitable one where you talk about Mitoma. Where is he going to go next? I mean, it was on ESPN Plus. Obviously, they've got the FA Cup rights. They go back to the studio. And the first thing Craig Burley starts talking about is about how long will Mitoma last at Brighton before someone tries to snap him up. I hate it, though. I just really hate it.
You're right to hate it, but I can't blame, like, Craig Burley, his mind going to that place. It makes, like, this is how we've been conditioned to think, because this is what happens. Play, like, and you're right. I don't know that Mitoma is going to be that player necessarily, but when we see, like, this is just the way that, like, the food chain of the Premier League operates.
I know, but
that's what you think when you see a player thriving at a club that isn't one of the top six. This is the way it goes.
And you know, there's no guarantees if he was to go to any of the top six that A, he'd start, or B, that he would be like, he would flourish in the way he's doing at Brighton, because
right,
sometimes,
like, for every N'Golo Kante, there's a Danny Drinkwater, you know,
yeah,
like
for every, like we say, I was so excited when Minamino came to Liverpool.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't really work out. I mean, there's lots of players that end up at the bigger clubs and it just doesn't happen for them.
Ross Barkley.
Barkley,
sure, like guys who we were sure were ultra talented players. You know, Stuart Downing, I remember going back a little bit.
Jack Grealish, you know, I mean,
easy. This is the unfortunate food chain that we're sort of operating in. So, yeah, I don't blame Craig Burley for thinking that way. That's more often than not how these stories end. But it was an extraordinary day for Brighton. Incredible drama for them to get that win in advance in this tournament. Liverpool are out. Their season of woe continues.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't know how much energy I've got left, you know, to talk about, you know, when you're in the middle of the
world. We don't have to do that. We had that conversation a couple of weeks ago. We don't have to.
Yeah, I was just listening to the Anfield Wrap this morning, which is a great podcast. It's, you know, as far as club podcasts go, it's hard to beat it. But, you know, they're talking about guys and just saying, you know, their legs have gone, which is just a euphemism for it's over for them at the top flight and at a club like Liverpool. And when you hear that, it's like,
well, not necessarily. See, I don't necessarily, this is why I keep saying that I'm not ready to kill them off, to end this era.
It's not about killing Liverpool. It's about killing certain players.
But
that's
to say
the problem.
But like the idea of their legs being gone, I think, like I've said all along, this season is shot. Forget it. This season is done. But it's just a matter of whether or not it's a reset or if it's the end of an era. And I think somebody's legs being gone, I think that's a thing that for certain players, yeah, you're right. I mean, guys who are up there in age, I don't know that they'll ever quite be the same. But I think a normal offseason, you know, which these guys will have. There's no major tournament on the horizon coming up this summer. I think that's a thing that guys can get that back. They just need a month. They just need 2 months.
Nah, sometimes it's never the same, and you can get performances here and there, but to get the consistency and the level, and it's about in that Liverpool midfield, Andrew. You have to have that step, and if you lose that step, if you're not first to the ball in for the tackle, then things what happened at the weekend continually happen and it breaks down. And I think Fabinho was the one that the guys on the Anfield Wrap focused on. Henderson too. I think it might,
for those two, it might be over.
Yeah.
It might be.
Try replacing them. It's going to cost you. But anyway.
And then of course the big story from the weekend, America's other team, Wrexham.
Steady.
3-3. Against Sheffield United, an absolute thriller.
Cracker.
I mean, it was kind of the game that, like, funny hype was placed upon for reasons that I guess we'll get into. But I mean, like all of a sudden there it is delivering on it. And like, it's become like, it's now taken on a life of its own. It's become like a Wrexham FA Cup event is one that like you can't take your eyes off of right now. And then I'm curious, JJ, them getting a replay, you know, obviously they wanted to win. Like that's the best case scenario is that they advance. But oftentimes we talk about like a team of that size, a non-league side getting a replay can in some ways almost be like, it can almost be better, right? Because they get an additional gate out of it that maybe wasn't anticipated beforehand.
Yeah, they get a portion of the gate of a bigger gate at Bramall Lane, which I mean can hold about 35 or 37,000. So yeah, it is good in that sense. But I think it was set up when Mullen scored to put them 3-2 up. It was really set up for that great moment. The racecourse ground is rocking. And it's a ground that's had big FA Cup moments before. They knocked out the league champions in 1991, Arsenal, in the FA Cup. So I think they would have loved for that to have happened. You know, the camera couldn't stay away from Ryan Reynolds, which is natural enough, I suppose. I do think in this case, and considering the backing they have, maybe they would have forgot, you know, they'd be able to forego the extra money. Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney may not feel that way at all. They may be okay, this is win-win. We've had our classic game at the racecourse, and now we can go and make some money at a bigger side, a championship side. So yeah, I suppose maybe there's two ways to look at that.
Did you see Ryan Reynolds, of course, is married to Blake Lively, the actress? Did you see her tweet?
No.
About how she went out and she, something to the effect of, I had to go out and buy ESPN Plus just so I can see the anguish on my husband's face. And like, it's a picture of him just like, he's just dying. Like you can just see, like it's the face we've all made any number of times watching a match.
But it's not a face he's made many number of times, because you know from watching the documentary how new and raw and kind of callow he is when it comes to the game. So he's feeling some of these feelings for the very first time. And as an owner, it's probably the type of owner he is, I think it's even more, it hits even harder, which is great.
So obviously, look, the soccer of it all was thrilling. It was amazing, this game.
I should say as well, sorry to interrupt, but yeah. John Egan's celebration at the end, shushing the crowd, was one of the great pieces of S. Housery, because I felt like saying, John, you're a recent Premier League team.
I know.
This is top of what the Sherpa Van National League or whatever it's called. You know, I mean, Vanarama National League. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, like,
it was still funny.
Go ahead and celebrate. Sure. Like, you just saved your FA Cup lives. It's a huge moment. But I agree. Like, that's I don't know. That's a weird look to me. Like, when you're in elementary school, if you're a fifth grader and you're playing like touch football out on the playground with kindergartners, like, that's a weird look. To kind of like shush them if you score a touchdown.
But you know what? When you're in the middle of it and the crowd was really, really up for this one, and they were getting involved with, you know, when the Sheffield United player was red carded, and for some reason he had to be chaperoned down the tunnel by Rian Brewster, who was wearing, I think, a Wisconsin Badgers baseball hat. Like, what's going on?
There's a lot going on here.
There is. And he's been shouted at by Welsh children as he goes down the tunnel. Like, I suppose once you're in the middle of that kind of cauldron, you kind of forget yourself and the kind of more raw base person comes out.
So can we talk about the other side of this?
Yes.
There is a fervor building here that it's very interesting, JJ. I guess this applies to life, culture, all sports, not just soccer, but we're dealing in soccer here, so I'll use that. Like, you just never quite know in this sport what is going to explode on social media. What are the topics that are just going to just take on this life and suck people in and infuriate people and start battles on Twitter? And Wrexham have become that. Now, I don't know how engaged people have been in this, but for those who haven't, I guess the Cliff Notes version here is that there's a segment of the American fan base that is absolutely loving what's going on here with Wrexham and the coverage that they're getting on ESPN and how fun this has been. And there is a competing segment of the American fan base that absolutely detests it. And it is and is enraged that this Welsh club is seemingly getting attention and treatment from ESPN that domestic clubs and MLS clubs here have not gotten.
Yeah.
And those two factions of soccer fans in this country are kind of, I wouldn't say at war with one another, but there's a lot of discourse going on right now on social media about that topic.
Yeah. And it's been going on for longer than the weekend. The weekend, I think, just brought it to a head with appearances from McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds prior to the game and the game getting covered on SportsCenter. Like, when's the last time a major MLS game or a game of any MLS stature got a SportsCenter slot? And it's not going to happen again in the future.
I mean, that's, MLS Cup final, but okay.
That's it. Has to be a cup final. This is an FA Cup game. And yeah, it kind of provoked the ire of MLS fans who really just wanted to know what is going on here. Like, also they've been annoyed going back, I suppose, over the winter when people have been binging Welcome to Wrexham and tweeting about it. The reaction has been to sniffily respond, well, you'll support this Welsh team you've just heard of because it has celebrity owners and it has done a documentary. But what about going to your local MLS game? What about going to your local ground and watching local soccer? You won't even do that, but you'll buy jerseys and merch and all that stuff. I can only imagine the merch that's flown out.
Oh, those Wrexham hats.
Yeah. So it's kind of sparked this thing which came to a head on over the weekend and has not stopped. I've been following it all the way through on Monday, like different people popping up and giving their take. Some people saying, hey, you can enjoy both, which is the real kind of...
By the way, yeah.
Yeah, you can. But you said this isn't a war. You have to place it within a larger context of American soccer for probably the last 30 years, certainly since the start of MLS, over what's good, what's bad, what's got history, what's got storylines, what's worth watching, what's worth supporting, and pro-rel. Pro-rel is at the center of this always. They feel like one of the great points that was made, and it is one that MLS supporters like bat away. So MLS supporters are saying, hey, we've got great storylines. We have amazing history and storylines in our league.
Mm-hmm.
And the response to that is, well, either, oh yeah, what are they? Or, but you don't. Because this is a club that's fallen through the basement of top flight soccer in the United in England and is coming back up. And it's all about the chase to achieve something that cannot be done in America. Thus, those storylines are killed in the womb. They can never happen because of the setup, because of the way MLS is constituted. And that is basically the crux of the argument. Now,
the other problem too is, like, if I asked you right now, and I'm putting you on the spot a little bit, but I can answer for you. If I just said to you right now, JJ, what's the best story that you can think of in MLS? Like, for me, I'll say it. I mean, for me, it's it was the Save the Crew movement.
Right.
That was an extraordinary story. Is that a story that MLS wants told?
Well, that's a great point.
I don't know that it is. Well, like it paint, like the fan base was heroic, but the league is kind of the villain in this story. And if this is arguably the greatest story that MLS has produced in terms of a human interest standpoint, and the league is not viewed favorably in it and is probably not behind the retelling of it, well, that is a problem.
Of course. And what is the league really? I mean, the league is the owners, the billionaire owners within MLS. And the point you made is something I hadn't thought about. Remember, there was an episode of Welcome to Wrexham, which was literally about their crappy owner or one of their crappy previous owners or a couple of them who brought them to this place. Do you think Anthony Precourt? Do you think Anthony Precourt is going to allow that kind of access and his name to be besmirched or told the truth about, depending on your viewpoint, because he's still the owner of Austin?
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a different thing. And also, it's very hard to replace
100 years of history. You know, yes. There's generations of people from Wrexham have been going to watch Wrexham Football Club. It's in their blood. Now, have some fallen away? Sure. Are there bandwagon ones? 100%. But that club's always been at the center of that community. You can't say that about MLS clubs. You literally can't say it about some of them because they're outside the town. They're 10 years old and they were built outside the town. They're not the center of anything.
And look, now, MLS is doing the best they can to catch up. Like, you can't fabricate history. It's a thing that has to happen organically. But I would say, the way that these fan bases have gravitated towards these clubs, and they are creating a soccer culture in this country. They are, but it's going to take time for it to take hold in the way that it has in some of these European countries. And I think the other thing too with this is like, there's also a uniqueness to this specifically. Like, if ESPN was just airing Wrexham matches, like in non-league play, like the repetitiveness, the monotonous of league of the season, like they wouldn't be getting this kind of treatment. You know, like they wouldn't be getting ratings. There wouldn't be as much interest in it. But there is a uniqueness to this tournament, to a team like Wrexham in the FA Cup specifically, taking on teams that are, leagues ahead of them, literally. So I think that is part of it. And the uniqueness of all of it, JJ, huge American stars are at the center of this, but not just American stars that any random actors that we would roll our eyes at. These happen to be, I'm not going to speak for everyone here, I'll speak for myself. These happen to be two really likable American stars that are in things that people love, that are guys that I think a lot of us could say, I could hang with that guy. Like, that looks fun to me.
All right.
So you've got it's that plus a historic competition, plus the David and Goliath storyline, which is probably among all American storylines that get propped up in sports, that probably is the number one storyline. And like it or not, the built-in credibility of this sport in Britain, you take all of those things together and it equals an intriguing viewing experience for American soccer fans. And so I don't know. I understand why hardcore MLS fans see this and are mad about it. I do get it. I will not shout them down and tell them that they're wrong. But I'm a little bit numb to it just because I feel like, JJ, you've been here long enough, so you can, I think you could probably speak to this as well. I've just kind of come to terms with the fact that this sport is just consumed differently in this country than any other sport. It just is. Like, we talk about this all the time. It's not the NBA. Like, you can't look at the way basketball is viewed in this country. Is if you want to be a basketball fan in this country, you watch the NBA. And that's what it is to be a basketball fan. To be a soccer fan in this country, it's fragmented. It's split up into many different factions. It's MLS fans. It's Premier League fans. It's Liga MX fans. It's just international fans that parachute in for USMNT or World Cups or Euros or Copa America. Like, that's just what it is to support soccer in this country, is to just take bits and pieces from all over the place. And when you put it all together, it's soccer fans. It's what it is to be a soccer fan. But so I'm just numb to it that there's a kind of an interesting soccer event that's going on. I'm going to watch it. I'll consume that. The sport is just, it's just consumed differently.
It is. And I think there's so much to unpack there as well. Now, I'll take you up on one of your points about, and this just shows the fractured nature of our soccer support in this country. You said that MLS is building a soccer culture here.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people out there who'll be just shaking their heads at you, Andrew, and saying, no, they're not.
I think that probably varies city to city.
We've got one. There was a pre-existing one. There are ones that exist up and down the divisions. There's ones that go back to the 1970s.
You're right, but I'm talking about beyond a niche culture.
Yeah. I don't know, man.
Go to Portland. They've built... I know in places like Portland, it has existed longer, but
Portland's been there since the early 70s.
Yeah, but it's mainstream now. In a way that it wasn't before.
I've been there. That is their own soccer culture. There's no question about that. But I do think there's other grounds where you can't say the same, and some of them in the tri-state area as well.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, there is so much in it, and I've like for my sins. There was a period during the podcast in 2015, 2016, where I was like deep in the soccer culture war. And it is like there are some people who are just like they will not accept MLS as their domestic league. They think it's illegitimate. They don't think it's right. And their minds are not for changing. And they will focus more on European football and their own hyper niche, hyper local football. And there's so many factions in this thing. I would say one thing as well, though, about you say about celebrities and people that you like. Mike Pendleton tweeted this. LAFC have Will Ferrell and half of Hollywood as owners and had a 10-part Walt Disney Company produced docuseries 3 years before Welcome to Wrexham. It wasn't interesting. Welcome to Wrexham was. Wrexham clearly had a compelling story portrayed in a compelling way. Sometimes an alchemy of factors come together at exactly the right time. Lightning in a bottle is hard to produce. You have to have a lot going for you.
That's a great point. Honestly, that's a great point. I don't know how to quantify why one thing works and another doesn't. Will Ferrell is enormously beloved. You're right. I don't know.
No.
I don't know. I think there's something too about like, I don't know, as an American, especially an American soccer fan, like there is a little bit of like, I don't know, I don't want to misuse this word, but like there's kind of an adventure element to this. Like these two American guys are kind of like, let's do this. Canadian. Let's buy a tiny little soccer team and see if we can actually turn them into something. Like there's just like, I don't know, like it is, it's funny to say this because they're Hollywood actors, but like it is sort of a Hollywood story that you can envision. So like there's that element of it.
And no one has gone near my point, which is a completely side issue, that as much as you are enjoying this, and I think we all are, I enjoyed the series. There's, what if you're from Bromley or any other than the Vanarama National League teams, and you see this club that was mid-table or whatever, albeit a big history club, getting pumped full of foreign money, money they can't get access to, not in a million years right now, and watch them take all the light and the and the heat and the hype. You know, that's another story too, and it happened with Salford as well, which I talked about before, when Gary Neville et al. Bought Salford and doped them up to the football league. So there's so many angles to this, but it was a great game, great finish to it, and looking forward to even more discourse upon the replay.
Well, the final thing that I'll say about this is, and again, I say this as an MLS supporter. I enjoy this league tremendously. I think it's great fun. And I am definitely one of those people who encourages you all to go out and support your teams in your cities because it's great. But I will say this, when you see this, it makes me worry for the new TV model of what's going on here, because it goes to show that there are soccer fans in this country. If they're worried about spending that money as MLS goes behind a pretty significant paywall, the likes of which we have not seen in this country before, they'll fill the void. They'll find a way to fill it, because it's not like if MLS goes behind the paywall, well, now you're shut out of soccer.
Nope.
That's not true. And you know, you may have to go behind other paywalls, but they're not as expensive as that one. And people, like, if you see the excitement that this random Welsh team generated, like, people will get behind it. They want to consume soccer, and it sometimes doesn't look like they care where they're getting it from, whoever will give it to them in the easiest way possible. And so I get why MLS is doing it. What they were doing before wasn't working. The TV ratings weren't there, but there's no guarantee that this will work either. And seeing this, I just worry a little bit.
My final point, and I echo those worries. My final point would be, the US Open Cup has given us some unbelievably cool moments in the last 6-7 years. Mm-hmm. Be it FC Cincinnati from the USL.
Yeah.
Remember knocking off Chicago in front of a full house in Cincinnati. Amazing. Christos from Maryland, basically named after a liquor store, scoring first against a professional DC United in the cup. I think Louisville as well had a great run too.
those stories, we covered them, we talked about them. People with bigger budgets did not. ESPN did show that one. That was one of the few Open Cup games they showed live, was Cincinnati. So look, yeah, I just think it's an interesting conversation, and it's not going anywhere. We are in a general culture war in this country, and soccer is has got its own.
Fascinating stuff. Any other FA Cup stories that you wanted to mention, JJ?
Not right now. Not really. Okay. No.
Arsenal, Man City?
Ugh, no.
Okay.
No.
Yeah, I get that.
No, we'll talk more about City down the line, and Arsenal. Arsenal have got their flowers from this podcast, so they can take a rest for this. They can take a backseat.
Let's see. A few other things that we wanted to get to. We have a mailbag coming up in a little bit as well. I should tell you, I have not really looked at it. So
it's
in God's hands now.
Just unprofessional.
Yeah. Well, I sometimes like to be surprised by what's in there. I don't know. Well, I kind of like the spontaneity of it all.
You like
keeps things fresh.
The danger.
Yeah, it is danger. It's flying without a net. Let's see, a couple other things, JJ. Sean Dyche, long anticipated, I suppose, over the course of the past week. He will now be Everton's next manager. And it's funny, as I saw this happen, initially my thought was kind of good for Dyche. Like, I think, you know, even though it ended badly, like we can go back to those shows. I very much supported his firing, which feels harsh, but I just felt that, I mean, if you're going down, you can't just allow it to happen. They had given him enough, you know, time, I think a fair amount of time to try to right the ship, and it wasn't getting righted. So I understood why he was fired, but by the same token, he had done so much at that club that he absolutely deserves to work again. You know, two top half finishes with Burnley, one of which took them into Europe. He absolutely deserves to work again, and he deserves a good job. And for however dire the situation is, I laid out the reasons on the last podcast why I don't think this Everton job is such a horrible job right now, because you can only succeed in this. Like, if you fail at this job, it's doing exactly what you're supposed to do. We're all looking at the talent on this team and saying they're not good enough. They're going down. If he does anything to help the situation, he'll completely rejuvenate his managerial career, which is why
disagree.
At this. And, well,
disagree.
All right. Well, hear me out for a sec. It's why I look at this situation, and my real thought goes not to Dyche. It's still with Frank Lampard. He's the one I worry for here, because if Dyche comes in a situation where we've all looked at it and said, oh, well, no one can win there. You know, and we all, Everton fans included, everyone seemed to heap sympathy upon Lampard. Oh, he got fired. He was a sacrificial lamb. You can't fire the players. He's got to go, because what else can they really do? They've got to try something to save their season, but no one can win in this situation. Frank gave it his all. Poor guy. Well, if Dyche goes in and wins, like they got Arsenal followed by Liverpool, let's just say they get a win and a draw or something like that. All of a sudden, you start to look at Frank and you think, oh, maybe he actually is the problem, or was the problem. So my worry right now is not for what happens next with Sean Dyche. It's how perception could still, even though Lampard is out, perception of what he did there could still potentially change if Dyche does a good job.
I don't know. There's the Lampard managerial complex, which will kick into gear, Andrew. Just trust me. On that, and we'll talk more about that. So I asked our friend Doug what his thoughts was. Doug, the beleaguered Everton supporter that's regularly referenced on the pod. Is Dyche a terribly confidence-inspiring appointment? No. He's a decent cultural fit and should provide some stability and courage, which is much needed. He may have been the most sensible choice out of the options within our reach right now. And I do agree with that. I do agree with that, because
it's a pretty rational response, I got to say. Good job, Doug.
I mean, all of it's rational. I just can't read all of it because it's too long. But that's the crux of what I was getting from him. And when you see Dyche talking today to Everton TV, there was none of the Yves Saint Laurent launch for Sean Dyche. There was just an interview where he says it's going to be about graft. You know, it's important at the football club to come in. You come in and you look at the players you have and you say, it's going to be graft. That's going to take us out of that. That's the first thing. Tactics come later, but really graft is most important. And that's the way they're going to go. They're going to be hard to beat. They're going to be very organized. He's got Tarkowski. He's got Cody there who can fit into that kind of defensive mode. He's worked with Dwight McNeil before. Maybe he can get a tune out of him. Nobody else has been able to. And it was brilliant today to see the disciplined daddy.
There's a new daddy in town. A disciplined daddy.
Oh, I love that music. I absolutely love that music. Deitch was in full training gear. He was full training W.
I mean, it's, can he be a full training W when it's sort of his job?
But you know, some managers, they don't really do it. But he had the shorts, the socks, and he had a gleaming new pair of Adidas Copa Mundials on, which I just co-sign on. And smiling as Everton's players look absolutely gassed from the first session. So there's these brilliant pictures of him there like a sergeant major just laughing while they are hunkered down, some of the, like with their hands on their knees, like blowing hard because it's just been a brutal running session. And they will run, Andrew, and they will run some more. This will not be highly tactical to start out with. And Dyche said that it's going to be about graft and organization.
I picture him going home and just watching Miracle on a loop, like the Herb Brooks scene, the again scene from Miracle. Like that's, we will not be the most talented team out there, but we will be the most fit team out there.
And they've left him no time in the window to get anything done. I don't think there's any money to get anything done. Now they did get 45 million for Anthony Gordon, but we'll talk more about Anthony Gordon later in the mailbag.
Oh,
yeah.
I didn't know that because I didn't read ahead.
No.
The mailbag.
No, I'm going to have to keep you on track now.
Deitch said, there is quality in this squad, but we have to make them shine. That's the job of me and my staff. Well, we'll see.
We will see.
Disciplined daddy. There's a new daddy in town.
There is a new daddy. I think he's got enough time to do it.
A couple other things, JJ. Weston McKennie, another story that we have felt coming for about a week or so now, and it is now official. He heads to Leeds.
Yeah, it's a loan move for Weston with an option to buy. And the usual mixed reaction. Those people, those Leeds fans that saw him in the World Cup, kind of enthusiastic about it. Those that see him just as a signing from Juventus, very enthusiastic about that. Those that think it's just another Yank coming in to make, to expand the boundaries of Yankshire under Jesse Marsh, a little bit more sceptical. But certainly greeted warmly by his compatriot, Tyler Adams.
And, oh, man, their interview. So it's just, if you're an American fan and you've been through it over the last month with Reyna and Bearhalter, and you're trying to remember, what didn't I love this squad? I thought I loved this team. What happened? Just watch the video. It's 3.5 minutes of Tyler Adams interviewing Weston McKennie, and all those warm feelings, they'll all come flooding back. You'll love the team all over again. It's going to be great. A friend of mine sent me the clip of it, and we were texting afterwards, and we said, can't we just get, like, I don't even want to watch them play. I just want to watch a reality show where Tyler Adams and Weston McKennie live together and do cool stuff. That's what I want to see.
Yeah, unfortunately, Andrew, there is the business of staying in the Premier League to be attacked. So you'll have to wait for that.
Honestly, though, in terms of the soccer, the soccer side of it, I don't really know. Like, I guess if you want to be a Leeds fan who is just skeptical because there's too many Americans here, all right. Like, you clearly have your notions, and I don't think anything we say can change your mind. But, like, removing myself from that, I don't know what's not to like about it.
No. I mean, I can see it comes into the team. We tried to visualize it the other day. I think he's a good addition. On a loan, I think it's a good move. But again, like, it's very hyper-focused. You come in now and you have to perform. You have to make an impact.
I think he's more than capable.
Because they are, like, the way they start games, they're not, like, at times you look at them and you think they should be way higher up the table. There's other times, though, they're just not good. And he has to be somebody who brings something to this. It's not just about our warm feelings, because we've got Americans at Leeds United. We've got to be a bit more cold. And I think it could see Aronson slip out of the side as well. So...
I would say by Americans in Europe standards, this is now the new standard. Like Fulham probably carried that banner for a long time, the McBride years, into Dempsey, Eddie Johnson there for a little bit, Tim Ream. This is it now. Like, I mean, to have Aaronson, McKinney, and Adams all there together with Jesse Marsh managing the team, like, I don't know how you top this if you're just like a neutral American fan who sort of just is into the Premier League. Like, this is the team you have to watch. Yeah. I would say, I don't support Leeds, but I kind of, as somebody who loves the U.S. men's national team, I feel compelled to watch them anytime they're on. And it'll be interesting to see if NBC and Peacock's coverage reflects that. I bet it will. It did earlier this season. I bet that'll be ramped up even more.
I would imagine so.
And then one other one, JJ, I don't know if stunning is even the word here. João Cancelo, I don't think it's official yet. Last time I checked, but it seems inevitable that he's going to be making a stunning move from Man City to Bayern Munich. What? Huh?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he hasn't had the best of seasons, but then consider the previous two seasons and it puts into context just how important he is for Manchester City. I mean, this is a guy who can play left back, right back. He's inverted wing back. He's part of the midfield as well. And then when they get to a certain part of the field, he's a creative, or has been a creative force too. But the only thing I can deduce is that there's been a falling out. Okay. Some kind of bust up between him and Guardiola, meaning, look, he's got to go. Or two, it's like a message to the whole squad. Like, making good on what he said before, where he wants his team back and he doesn't feel they're performing. And he's just saying, look, it doesn't matter who you are, even if you're one of our best players, Premier League team of the year twice in a row or whatever Cancelo was, if you do not perform, you're gone. Or the third thing is, he's 28. And there's been a decline this season. And Guardiola just sees, okay, like 28's young, there's still a good few years of football, but you hit 30 and then it is diminishing returns, generally speaking, except for some players. And that maybe I don't want to go through all that. I've seen the decline now. I can get him away. I can possibly get him away permanently, get good money in. I got Rico Lewis, a young player that may be able to do something. I also have my eyes on some other players. Maybe this is the time to just get rid.
I think for what you just said, it's a combination of one and two. Okay. I don't know if I'm going to go with three. I think it's one and two. One, this feels to me, I mean, like João Cancelo, let's not undervalue what he's meant to this Manchester City team. Like, obviously they're a team loaded with superstar players, and it's why they've been so dominant. But even among those superstar players, he has been a standout superstar. In the last 2 years, he's made two PFA Premier League teams of the year. And I believe in one of those years, he was Manchester City's player of the season,
yeah,
which is almost as difficult an award to win as the actual PFA player of the year. So he's not just some guy. So this feels like one of those situations that we sometimes talk about on the show, JJ, where you kind of have to trust your gut. Like, if something feels weird here, then it probably is weird. Like if it feels like there's more to this than we know, there probably is.
Yeah.
That's where I land on this. Like, I don't think that 2 years of unbelievable performance from João Cancelo can be eliminated because of a bad month. Like, that doesn't make sense to me. And I think Pep is too smart for that. So I think that it's a combination of the first thing you said, something happened behind the scenes with Cancelo, with Pep, with maybe Cancelo and a teammate, with Cancelo in the wrong. I don't know. I'm grasping at straws. I just know a weird situation when I see one. And a guy who was incredible, transcendent for two seasons, who's had a bad month and is now shipped out, something happened. I have to believe that. And I combine it with the second thing you said for this. This was Pep Guardiola on BT Sport. I don't remember exactly when it's from, but it's him and Rio Ferdinand. And basically it's Pep talking about his philosophy of not just team building, but how to keep a team great. Here's Pep with Rio Ferdinand.
How difficult is that for you to do mentally every year? For yourself, I think it would maybe not be as difficult, but to get players to do it for free, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years,
how many Premier League did you win?
Six.
You had the same squad the first Premier League 6-1? You have to shake, you have to move. With the same guys, it's almost impossible. We change. After defeat and win, we change, me included, we change. In the beginning, you accept things.
Yeah.
But when you win, you accept less.
Yeah.
And you are in the position you are, no playing, after playing. And after I don't play, I don't accept. I want to still playing. And sometimes accept it, sometimes done. You have to move. So the process and do this is the most, but you have to do it. If don't, it's impossible.
I mean, you hear it right there. You've got to change the squad. So if Pep has a guy that he's had a falling out with, and he has a philosophy of to continue to be great, we have to do radical things and keep this squad fresh. Then all of a sudden Cancelo becomes a natural target to be one of those players who's moved on. And you're right, he's 28, so he's getting near 30, but that is still in the thick of his prime. So they can still stand to make a lot of money off of this. And if they think they have players waiting in the wings, Lewis, like you mentioned, Nathan Ake has played well in that position of late, then he becomes expendable. In Pep's mind.
I mean, it's still a gamble because of the things he's able to do. And the way he just kind of, I mean, he can thread a pass, he can pick out a cross, he's brilliant in the final third. And in the way that Pep likes to play, maybe it signals a change in how Pep's going to go about things. But it's one of those where we don't know yet how this is going to play out. He may be a success, and then people ask why Pep did it. I don't know. It's still curious to me, and I think you're right. Something it isn't just maybe football related. Maybe it's team ethic, team squad related.
Yeah. Let's see one other one here. I didn't mean to skip over this. Nothing is done yet. Again, it's speculation, but rumors are really building in a hurry that Chelsea are going to make yet another massive addition to the squad in Enzo Fernandez, the World Cup young player of the tournament from Benfica. This is wild. You pointed out, JJ, on the rundown that Chelsea's spending is currently around 185 million euros in January alone. A move for Enzo Fernandez would take them to 300 million. Chelsea have signed 17 players for a total of 495 million pounds across the last two transfer windows.
Look,
I don't
try and explain
how can they do this.
I don't know. This is one of those where I just don't know.
When is the sell off going to occur? I mean, I know there's rumors about Jorginho, there's rumors about Conor Gallagher, but like Hakim Ziyech, but nothing's happened yet. I assume something will, but even if it does, I mean, how much money are those guys going to recoup for Chelsea? I don't know how this is sustainable.
No, I don't know either. I just have this vision of Todd Boehly in like a swanky Los Angeles bar, and he's meeting Graham Potter for the first time, and Potter just says, "Look, I just need to know you'll back me," and Boehly responds, "I'll give you everything," and Potter goes, "That's very reassuring," and then Boehly, in a strong whisper, he leans in and he goes, "Everything," like Boehly's just that's creepy, I know. But Boehly is just throwing everything at this, like, you know, and maybe it's the composition of the contracts. Maybe he's figured out a way to make those work. I don't know, but it's a bit mad.
It is, right? Like, I would almost, I don't know. I'd like to talk to a Chelsea fan. Like, I know fans of major Premier League teams, they want this. Like, they want to see ownership back the manager, enhance the squad, spend. That's what fans want. Like, it's funny because fans complain about, oh, there's too much money in the game, and, you know, Manchester City are running wild. But deep down inside, that's what everyone wants for their own team. But I would be curious to talk to a Chelsea fan and say, do you actually think that what's going on here is good? Like, yeah, you're going out and you're buying a bunch of big name players, but and spending a lot of money and investing in the squad. Like, on the surface, that's all good, but doesn't this all feel just kind of like, I don't know, random? Like a kid who's run into a toy store and is just grabbing everything off the shelves, But then when they get home, it's like they don't even know what to do with it. It's too much. They just see a mound of toys in front of them. They don't know how to play with it all.
Are you a first-time poker player who just like doesn't get it, gets overly excited, and then pushes everything, all his chips, to the middle of the table? I mean, it's strong from Bowley, I have to say. I don't know what the plan is, but it's huge pressure now for Potter. I mean, Frank Lampard was under huge, huge pressure himself when they did they had their $250 million summer where he brought in the Germans, and he couldn't really get a note out of them. Then Tuchel comes in and makes it look relatively easy, wins the Champions League. Big expectations now for Potter with that kind of outlay.
I mean, look, if it works, it has potential to be spectacular. And I would say, I guess it could compete with Manchester City for league titles. But for it to work, like, a lot of things are going to have to go right here. A lot of just kind of like guys that have been brought in that you hope fit in these holes. Like, is it square pegs and round holes, or did they actually go out and get round pegs for round holes? I mean, like I said, I said last time, we felt scattergun. We'll see.
It just seems like a list of the most kind of sought after players has been made up, and Todd has gone, bring them to me.
Yeah.
So we'll see if you can put that into a coherent side right
but
now.
But like the other thing too is like
a bit top heavy.
Yeah, but is it also just a little bit of spending for spending's sake? Like, what about the fact that Reece James and N'Golo Kanté and Ben Chilwell are all going to come back at some point? Did you need to spend almost $500 million on your squad?
But he's probably spent $500 million in positions that they don't play in. That's the point. He's just looked at the forward line and said, none of these guys are working out. The Ziyeches, the Pulisics, the Havertz, the whatevers, out. When are they going out?
Who's leaving?
Summer, probably.
He's only just brought Aubameyang in.
Aubameyang, jeez. Like, and that's another one that made no sense then. It makes no sense now. And, I mean, the rumor 2 weeks ago was Aubameyang was trying to get back to Barcelona somehow. I don't know.
We'll see. Like I said, if it works, whew, then what a monster they've created. But I don't know. We'll see. And we'll see who's headed out.
I mean, they can't register all these players for the next round of the Champions League. They can't do that. So players are going to have to miss out.
And then finally, before we get to the mailbag and close on that, JJ, I know you wanted to mention something about Napoli.
Something about Napoli. 13 points clear at the top of Serie A. That's a bit more than something. A late Giovanni Simeone goal sinks Mourinho's Roma, who Mourinho, in weird fashion, after the game, then did a dressing room picture, like a squad shirtless picture, you know, where everyone's grouped together after the 2-1 defeat. And there's a few bemused faces, a few awkward smiles, like, actually, nobody's really smiling. I'm looking at it now. It's just an odd thing to do, and put it up on his Instagram. I think he doesn't understand that photo and how it's supposed to work. Anyway, the Osimhen goal, the opening goal, Kvaratskhelia crossing to Osimhen, who chests it, knees it, and then blasts it into the roof of the net for the opening goal for Napoli. Absolutely brilliant. And here's what it sounded like.
Mario Rui makes a hurry, cleverly done. Kvaratskhelia with the ball in. Osimhen, and still! It's them two again! Kvaratskhelia the provider! And Osimhen with one of the goals of the season. He bags the opener here, and it is an absolute beauty.
So this could be it. This could be it. 13 points. It will take an epic collapse now.
They can't.
I can't see Inter catching them. I hope they don't. Amazing.
13 points.
I know. It's just...
It's over. It's over. If this were the Premier League, we on this podcast, we'd be saying to each other, what do we have to talk about the rest of the season? It's over.
I just, in my mind, Newcastle 12 points clear in February. And they got they got pulled back. So anyway, it's time for Mail Beasy, Andrew.
Nice.
CaughtOffsidePod@gmail.com @COSoccerPod on Twitter. Take a second. Take your phone out. @COSoccerPod Twitter. Go follow us there. Instagram, CaughtOffsidePod. So simple. Go follow us there. Bunch of people want to talk about the Anthony Jedi Robinson move to Man City rumor. Yeah, like I saw everyone talking about it, but I didn't see exactly where it originated. But I don't know. What do you think?
Well, maybe it would explain some of their willingness to let Cancelo leave.
But yeah, I mean,
correct me if I'm wrong. I'm doing a kind of like a quick Google search, but I feel like I remember Pep speaking highly of Robinson in the past. Am I making that up?
I think that might have happened.
I think it did. So maybe it's kind of like weirdly been somebody who has been on his radar. I'm trying to find it because I don't think I'm making that up. I feel like I remember. No.
Well, anyway, it's just for me. He's not like you're asking Anthony Robinson to come in and like I don't see him starting. I really don't. And as much as we like him, and we do like him, it's through the prism of the U.S. men's national team and the things he does for Fulham. It's a different thing to come in to step into that position and try and replicate all the things that a Cancelo would do. So I wouldn't see it as a replacement. I would see it as maybe another piece, or maybe he wants to make changes. But yeah, I mean, I guess, you know what, when I talk to Jack Collins of the Fulhamish podcast, maybe this deal will be done or maybe it won't be done. But when I talk to him for our In the Club, we'll be able to get a little bit more out of him on why Guardiola might really want Robinson.
July 11th, 2021, in Daily Mail, Pep Guardiola said to be an admirer of Anthony Robinson and could sign him as cover. So that was a year and a half ago.
That the cover part is what concerns me.
Yeah. Because that was a year and a half ago. Robinson is a year and a half more experienced, more proven in this league, played in a World Cup.
Yeah.
So
25 is not the age to be suddenly taken to the bench, is all I would say.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
Jenna Green, question for the pod. In light of all the Paratici stuff, how much does this implicate Conte? They were at Juve for a while together, and there was absolutely no way Conte didn't know about the under-the-table dealings, right? Love y'all as always. Thank you, Jenna.
I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know?
I don't know. Is that something to be assumed? That Conte knew?
No, I wouldn't.
What Juve's accounting looked like?
but I read a piece in The Guardian which suggests that, okay, whatever he did or did, Conte did or didn't know, that's an irrelevance, I would say, at this point. It's more the case that the ban could be extended from Italy to England. And I read that last week.
About Paratici?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, I know that. But I thought if we're talking about Conte...
I don't think it implicates Conte.
No, I don't either. Look, you can make any assumption you want or have any preconceived notion that you want about it. But I don't know that I am so confident that I would just assume that Conte was a part of this in some way.
No, and I wouldn't imagine Conte would be somebody who wanted to get into the minutiae of signing players. I mean, and a lot of this was like, you know, bookwork. It was like ledgers and transferring, you know, monies and basically making things up. So I don't know if Conte will get involved on that side of things.
If he ever did ask, how are we doing this?
Right.
Like, he's not the money man. If Paratici says to him, or Agnelli says to him, you know, that we have found a clever loophole, something like that, like, all right, what's he supposed to say? You know what? I'm going to give me your books. I'm going to look deeper into this. No, he's going to say, oh, great. Good job. Like,
cool, so guys. Keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah. Like, I don't. Maybe I'm being naive. But I don't see it as an immediate implication of Conte.
We have no evidence, Your Honor. Sorry, Jenna.
Yep.
Meech, given the Anthony Gordon move, if Everton were to get relegated at the end of the season, is it better he moved to Newcastle now, or would it have been better if he stayed, from the player's PR perspective / his legacy at his boyhood club? I would forget about that question with him. He was a target for Everton fans long before they confronted him in the car park. They didn't feel he was doing very much on the field. They didn't feel his attitude was right. When they heard he wanted to go to Chelsea, he wanted to go at the start of the season. That kind of ramped up. His legacy is no legacy at Everton.
Well, he's been with them since he was what, 11?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The way he's gone reminds me, it doesn't remind me, but like Frank Lampard has no legacy at West Ham. They hated him when he left, and a lot of Blues were just happy to see Anthony Gordon go, and were delighted to get 45 million for him.
And that would probably be the way that I would feel about it. Yeah. I remember talking about it over the summer and sometimes being a little bit puzzled that he was being valued at what he is.
Oh, yeah.
And I think he's fine. He's a fine player. He's a young player. He'll get better. But is he a difference maker? I don't know. I'm not there yet with him.
No, and neither are his stats, which is important. We'll see if Eddie Howe can do another brilliant job. Kenneth. JJ. Your anti-Chelsea feelings were on display during the Lampard out discussion.
Here we go.
Not that most of what you said wasn't true, just with the passion with which you said it. I see little difference between Frank and Steven Gerrard's tenure at Aston Villa. Uh-huh. You said basically the same thing about both performances, but your tone differed greatly. I don't think that either of them is going to amount to much as a coach unless they can take a more humble approach and head down the pyramid or to lesser leagues to learn their craft. Being a legend will only get them so far.
So how does this make you feel, JJ, that he seems to have agreed with everything you said, he just didn't care for the way in which you said it?
Yeah,
is that what I'm supposed to take from this?
Yeah, incredible. I'll just deal with anti-Chelsea. Like, how can me saying Chelsea deserved or too big of a club to have someone as inexperienced as Frank Lampard managing them be a shot at Chelsea? How is that anti-Chelsea? If anything, I want better for Chelsea. Is what I'm saying. And the tone, the difference between the Gerrard and the Lampard tone is, like I said, Gerrard played shocking football at Villa. Like, they were stink. You couldn't watch them. I would go back to first principles. I don't think Steven Gerrard should have got the job at Rangers. But when he did go and win the league with them. So at least he had that one thing on his CV. Frank Lampard walks into the Derby job, achieves nothing there. Goes to the Chelsea job, gets top four, fair enough or whatever, but goes nowhere. The man is out within the year. And then somehow lands one of the biggest jobs in football or one of the, what used to be a big job in football at what used to be a big club, still is in my eyes, Everton. It's like, what is this alchemy? That's the difference. And I think my tone if my tone needs to be evened out towards both of them, I would say, okay, fair enough. They both have benefited from their names, and Frank Lampard has benefited even further from the fact that it was his uncle, Harry Redknapp, who encouraged the owner of Derby to give him a shot and give him an interview when Lampard was on his way to interview at Leeds. So, I mean, I'm sorry that my tone didn't match for both, but I think both of them are and were ill-equipped to get the jobs they got first.
Look, you hate Chelsea. Just say it, JJ.
That's it, Andrew. Hate them. That is. That's it. You got me, Kenneth. You got me. JJ's football fetishes, which sounds like a website. Paul Burkett. Was it just me, or was JJ's list of the things he looks at when entering a stadium really the checklist he goes through to find something he hates, which he has to find before he can watch the game?
That sounds about right.
No, it's not about that's wrong. It's not about hating them. It's about the inconsistencies and the differences. I enjoy seeing those. And yeah, there might be some stanchions I don't enjoy as much as other ones, or some net formulations that I don't like as much as others. But that's not the. It's not about hating them. It's about noticing the differences.
I won't be happy in this ground until I've found something in here that I can hate.
No.
And I think that's the way you function.
No, it's the differences. It's not about hating them. And I'm sorry if it came across as hate on the last podcast, because I don't think it'd be a great fetish if it was a hateful fetish. That's a dark place to go.
Mm.
I don't want
that. Let's explore that.
No, that's not. It's not. Let's keep that above the surface. And finally, this is one for you, Andrew. I'll let you deal with this one. Jack Dawson. Hey, guys, I've been listening to the pod since 2016. Oh, but my first time writing in. Thanks for that, Jack.
Where were you the first 2 years?
Oh, my God. Jack's a ride or die. He's hardcore. I will not have you hate on Jack Dawson.
I'm kidding.
One of the best names you could possibly have. How
Isn't
nice
that
is
the name of Leonardo DiCaprio's character from Titanic?
Jack Dawson, was it?
I think so.
Oh. Andrew has conveyed his thoughts on switching sports teams before, but I got into a debate about it with some friends and wanted to get your thoughts. I was born in Columbus, Ohio, but moved to Philly when I was 5.
Nice.
I'm a diehard Philly sports fan, but the Union didn't exist until I was in middle school. Because Philly didn't have a team, I was a Crew fan, but I switched to supporting the Union after they came around. Oh, I'm confused. Am I a bad fan for switching to a team in the city that I consider home, or should I have stuck by the Crew? I'm just going to say quickly, I don't think you're a bad fan.
No, you're not. Although I guess I would, the way I view it is, well, how big of a Crew fan were you then? If you were able to leave? Like, I've never actually, and look, well, this is all in good fun. Root for whoever you want to root for. Like, I'm not the arbiter of this. I can only tell you how my loyalties lie. I'm not saying they're right or wrong. This is just through my mind. I've never actually lived in Philadelphia while the Union were in existence. I had moved already, but my loyalty is to that city.
That's for sure.
I've lived in New York for 16 years. I still don't consider myself a New Yorker. I'm probably wrong in feeling that way, but it's just how I feel. For whatever reason, I can't explain it. I'll just always identify as a Philadelphian. And so despite never having lived in Philadelphia while the Union were in existence, the second that they appear, I didn't have an MLS club. I was living in New York, but I couldn't attach myself to the Red Bulls or NYCFC because I don't identify with New York. The second the Union became a team, that was my team because I feel Philadelphian in my heart and soul. Everyone's different though. Like if you move from Columbus at age 5, I understand that that's, you were young enough where you probably didn't have that attachment to that place. I left Philadelphia when I was 22. So it's different. I spent my whole youth there growing. I grew up there. So I get it. That's fair. I won't kill you for that. I'll allow it. I think that's okay. But yeah. I would say how I started this. I don't know that you were ever, if you can just leave a team for another team, then that just tells me that you were probably never that big of a fan of that team in the first place.
Yeah.
I do believe that.
Yeah, that's fair. I think I tend to agree with that too. And that is the mailbag.
Oh, yeah.
Please go now and rate us on iTunes. Leave a comment, leave a remark, be kind, give us 5 stars. And go give us 5 stars then on Spotify or wherever you listen to our podcast. You got to keep doing that. I don't care how many reviews you got to leave. You got to keep doing that.
Yeah, it's hugely helpful.
Massively helpful.
Hugely helpful. This was great fun, JJ.
It was fun.
Great fun. I enjoyed this thoroughly.
Yeah. You had a nice weekend. You're off to another superb owl.
It's unbelievable.
It really is. Some of those penalty calls or non-calls were unbelievable. Yeah.
Eagles game?
Yeah. I saw a lot.
Boy, it is funny. I don't know if this is just like a part of, like when you get these games, I don't know. Don't you find, I'm not just saying this as an Eagles fan, the two teams that won this weekend, the Eagles and the Chiefs.
Yeah.
I feel like from all the media that I've consumed over the last 24 hours talking about those games, the general public in this country is doing all they can to delegitimize those two wins. I don't know why.
Well, people don't like Philadelphia sports fans.
I think that is because I've noticed it throughout this season with the Eagles. And I think, like, at different points, I told myself, oh, you're just being a Philadelphia biased whiny baby. No one actually dislikes your team. But, like, I've now had people who are not Philadelphia sports fans make these same observations.
Yeah.
And I do think that there is something to it. And I'm trying to figure out what the theory is as to why people continue to delegitimize them and their success. And I do think it has a lot to do with the fan base, that a lot of fans outside of Philadelphia just find loud and obnoxious.
Yeah.
So they just don't want to give them their due.
Ignorant.
Not ignorant. Flatulent. It's not an ignorant fan base. It's just a loud, obnoxious one. At
flatulent,
time.
Grotesque. Yeah.
Fine. All those things. So I do think that, like, there will be reporters who say, no, I'm an unbiased journalist. Nonsense. Okay. Like, whether it's subconscious or conscious, I believe that that can be a thing, that you just don't want to give credit to that team because you don't want to give that fan base anything else to feel good about.
I think also people are scared, certainly in my part of the world, that this is a second Super Bowl for the Eagles in 5 years. And it would be, like, they look dominant, their pass rush looks immense, and they're going up against the hobbled Patrick Mahomes as well, depending on how much he can fix that high ankle sprain. And if they get after him, I mean, the Super Bowl could be pretty boring.
So that would surprise me. Now, I do believe the Eagles are better. I do think that they're a better team. I think that this is, I've seen two, in my lifetime as an Eagles fan, I've seen two truly great teams. The 04 Super Bowl team that lost to the Patriots and the 17 Super Bowl team that beat the Patriots. I think if they got to finish the job, if they do, I think this is the best Eagles team I've seen in my life.
Yeah.
From top to bottom, it's the most complete team. There's no weakness. They are number one in the league in various elements of the game, offensive line, pass rush. Their quarterback is probably going to finish runner up in MVP voting. It's the best receiving core they've ever had. That's undeniable. I think it's the best Eagles team I've ever seen, but they've got to finish the job, and it won't be easy because this Chiefs team is tested. So
I think the Super Bowl needs a good game. I really think that.
I mean, last year was pretty good. Came down to the end.
Didn't it?
That's not an opinion.
It came down to the final two minutes.
Matt Stafford led the drive down.
Oh, yeah. So he did, yeah. But that was, okay, that was the Rams.
Okay.
So it doesn't really count. I think it needs a good Super Bowl.
All I've heard is, like, you know, the Chiefs, oh, well, you know, all the calls, the replaying of the third down, Burrow not getting the late hit call. Why was that? Intentional grounding. Like, no one has really said anything about, like, the Chiefs being good and Mahomes having this epic performance. Like, the Eagles, like, it hasn't been anything about, this team is really dominant. They went 14-3. They were the one seed for a reason. It's only been that this was gift wrapped for them by the competition that they've played so far. Well, you know what? They're the one seed. They earned that. Like, you, when you are the one seed, you get the easiest route.
I think.
And if people have a problem with the Eagles not having to face a team with a functioning quarterback in that game, that's fair. My answer to that would be, maybe don't use a backup tight end to block the second best pass rusher in football, because that's a choice that a coach is making. And when he makes that decision, you are putting your quarterback at risk.
See, folks, if Tottenham ever get really, really good, this is what he's going to be like.
You opened the door. I had no intention of bringing up football.
I wanted to congratulate you on making it to another superb owl. And I hope you bring that feathered bird back to Philly.
Well, what was I saying before? This was great fun. I enjoy this immensely. JJ, we have an In the Club coming out to look forward to this week on Fulham, America's former team that has now been supplanted by Leeds and possibly Wrexham. So we'll ask Jack Collins of the Fulhamish podcast what he makes of the fact that they are no longer America's team, and if he's ready to live in a world where Fulham are not America's team. I don't know. I'm not sure how they're adjusting to this. At any rate, this podcast was awesome. I loved it, JJ. You got anything else?
No. I have to get off now. I've got to warm up and be rested for tomorrow so I can be more biased against your teams.
Ah, all right. Best of luck with that. Hey, to you I say...
Check you later, phone boy.
I'll see you.
Take care, man.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.